Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and welcome back to another segment of Our Community. It's the Saturday following Thanksgiving, and it seems appropriate to reflect on some of the things that we're grateful to have in our lives. You know, we spend so much of our time thinking and talking about the things that aren't working out the way that we'd like, the snags in our plans, the bumps in our pathways, and the losses. And certainly there have been more than plenty of those to distract us in the past several years. And I don't think there's any blame or shame in feeling simply exhausted by the pretty constant onslaught. So I suggest that we remember to take care of ourselves. One of the ways to do that for me is to consciously think about all the things that go well in my days, jotting them down on my gratitude list. And it can actually be a bit surprising at the end of the day to notice that there's so much there. It seems that the more that I focus on those things, the more of them there are in my life, which lowers my stress level, which is also a really good thing. Someone used the phrase radical self-care. I like that. So I'm joined again today by Brookings Core Response Executive Director, Diana Cooper. Hi, Diana. It's Hi. Always good to see you.
Yeah, I was thinking the radical self-care. I've heard it before, but that sounds interesting.
It does, doesn't it? And what got me when I heard it was, why does it have to be radical, right? Like, what is it?
Yeah, what does that
about
mean,
self-care? Self-care? Yeah, I mean, what is it about taking care of yourself is radical? Like, is it a radical concept?
Well, you're probably asking the wrong person because Matt it basically is calling and setting up doctor's appointment for me. So
not too much self-care going on in your universe?
Not too much care of self. Bernie says this. He says something about, people who's like the shoemaker's children are barefoot. Yes. And, my dad was a cabinet maker, and I joke that, like, for some of our, teenage years, we didn't even have doors on our cabinets because he was redoing them, He's making them look nicer. But in the 4 or 5 years it took him to replace them, I don't know that they look nicer. But it's just like we know how to do that work, so we'll get to it. We know what we need to do. And so that's how I feel like we all do that. And for us, for me, it's often helping people navigate social services and healthcare systems and things. I sort of neglect to do that for myself. I know how to do it. And I'm like, as soon as I get to it, it'll get done because I know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
but I know.
It's
take
just
the time.
That we're a little low on our list of priorities.
Yeah. I'm in the queue.
Right. Yeah, we're in the queue, but we're not right up at the top. Yeah. And, I was thinking about this, too, because when I was growing up, my mother, who was a dyed-in-the-wool Catholic, was insistent that selfishness was a bad thing. And so somehow selfishness and self-care, anything where you focused on yourself was kind of cast in that whole funny light. Like, it was not okay to think about yourself. It was not okay to put yourself high on your list of priorities. And I think there's a big difference between selfishness and self-care.
Yeah. I mean, yes, there is. And I think that somehow we've wrapped that up into our culture in a way that, I'm the same way. I feel like I know, and Matt knows this about me. I'm sure a lot of people know this about me, but I just feel that I always have to be productive. I always have to be working. And so they're always, everything I do has to be productive. And that, I'm sure, it means many things to many people, but for me, that means, I can see the fruit of my labor. And sometimes when that comes to medical care and things like that, it's kind of like, well, you know, but I'm not actually dying. So, you know, I don't see the...
Well, except in the sense that we are all actually...
Right, we're all slowly dying one day at a time. But, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that productivity and that need to, you know, some of this comes alongside the bootstraps mentality of, you know, get it done. And so I tend to get wrapped up in that too. And I said, you know, it's in the queue. I joke because I say that a lot about, you know, I've said that for years when Matt needs something or he needs to talk to me and I'm thinking about something, like, you know, it's in the, I'll get to you. Like, give me just a minute, you know? So that's basically how my life runs right now. And I'm in the queue too somewhere.
So. Well, what I've noticed about my ability to be there for other people is that if I'm not taking care of myself, if I'm not doing self-care on a regular basis to give myself what I need, that gas in my tank, whatever, whatever that looks like, then my ability to be of service to other people actually diminishes because there's just not as much of me available. And I think that that's the piece that has been like left out or forgotten in terms of the whole selfish or focusing on yourself, that you really, in order to be the best person that you can be, to bring that best person into all of your interactions with your children, with the rest of your family, with your friends, you have to focus a little bit on you. you have to. You have to.
Yeah, I find that if I'm, you know, I'm trying to kind of reclaim my weekends and evenings in a way that is healthier for me, because the last year and a half hasn't necessarily been healthy for probably a lot of people. There's so many people that are overworked right now. But, you know, I'm trying to sort of reclaim that time. And I find that I've become a little bit, I almost said selfish. I don't know what that appropriate word is, but
It feels funny.
Yeah,
it feels funny.
I get almost grumpy, you know, if somebody gets a hold of me on the weekend. And I had to sit back and think about it the other day, because I thought, like, I don't want to just be this angry person when people reach out. And, you know, this job is different, and there are things that have to happen outside of regular hours sometimes. But I don't want to just be this grumpy person. So I'm working on how I can have, you know, good boundaries and still maintain what I do. But, you know, I also have to think about the fact that I do have four kids. I keep saying I have four small kids, but I guess they're not like too small anymore.
They're not really small.
I mean, one is like...
Two of them are kind of small, but...
Yeah, they're kind of small.
But the other two really aren't.
No, but no. Yeah, so I want to say I have four small children at home, but I just have four kids. So, and they need me, and not in the sense that, you know, I need to quit my job and stay home. But if I'm working, let's be realistic. If I'm working 50 to 60 hours a week, then my weekends need to be uninterrupted for them, because they just so need me. So,
and yet in that equation, I didn't hear anything about what Diana needs.
Well, Diana needs them, so
that's accurate. But
yeah, I do.
But in terms of a recharge, you know,
that's my recharge. It really is. I'm one of those people who recharges at home, you know, and I think a lot of people do anyway, but there's some theory about introvert and extrovert. But, you know, I'm definitely introverted in the sense that that's how I recharge, is at home. And I know I get a lot of offers like, you can come hang out with me if you want to just sort of reset and recharge. And I thought, like, that's what I'm doing here, you know. So I get much less out in the world than I do at home. And having the kids hang off of me and rolling over me and Matt near me is basically how I recharge. So
that's great. No, that's really, that's great. I remember when Jake was talking about recharging, and he would do it by taking solitary hikes. Mm-hmm. And that's, and he'd mm-hmm. do that after work or, you know, whatever. And I, some of us do absolutely need to be alone in order to do the whole recharging thing.
Like, yeah.
I need to be alone. I find that if I'm sitting mm-hmm. like at a desk with a pen and a paper and I'm writing, I am tapped into that gas tank that's filling up.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there probably have been times where, like when I wasn't working, where being alone might have been, you know, I needed some alone time, maybe mm-hmm. away from the kids or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I mean.
And everybody's got different ways of doing it. It different things work for different people.
And Matt and I have just been very lucky in the sense that we both feel the same way. So even when I needed time away from the kids, I've never felt that I needed time away from Matt. Never. And I think he probably feels the same way. In fact, I could guarantee he feels the same way.
Given some of his posts that I've seen on Facebook, I think that we could guarantee that he feels the same way. He's a mushy guy. I know.
Yeah.
But very nice. I mean, that's so sweet.
Yeah, I think I'll keep him.
I think you should. Yeah.
Giving it some thought.
So Thanksgiving. Here we are a couple days after Thanksgiving. So
everybody's thinking about the pounds they're putting on.
Or not.
Oh, we still have Christmas coming, so
we do.
People are probably holding that in the back of their mind, trying not to think about it.
Well, do you do the whole traditional, you know, gather family and friends and eat food thing?
Well, I mean, yes and no. You know, we haven't abandoned the entire holiday or the meaning. I mean, we haven't abandoned it completely, but we have never really participated in the way that we've never really participated in most holidays and I guess even birthdays the way that, you know, we think of them as traditional, you know. So here in at least in where when I grew up, you know, thinking of birthdays, we thought of birthday cake and birthday presents and sometimes parties and balloons and pizza. And, you know, we kind of, I don't know, but it's sort of this default where we can change certain things, but that's originally what we think about when we think about birthday. And so it's kind of the same way with Thanksgiving too. You know, we all sort of default to thinking of turkey and corn and all of these veggies and things like that. So we don't really, we've never really participated the same way. We don't, sometimes we do. Sometimes we cook a turkey and have all of the traditional sides, but we've never really felt into it. And we've also, you know, I was just talking to somebody about this recently, and it's actually somebody in Australia. I was kind of in a worldwide group conversation. There was like six or seven of us in different countries. Yes, it was very fun.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of talking about, you know, the idea of the holidays and the idea of family and traditions, and I think the topic of culture came up, and this person, an older woman in Australia, she's probably, you know, close to your age, and she's very nice and very intelligent. And she said, you know, that she observes, she works at a college with teenagers and, you know, people in their 20s and 30s. And she said that she observes that a lot of people our age sort of aren't quite sure of their culture. You know, there's a kind of a quest for culture. And I think that in people our age, well, people younger than
your age.
Yeah, my age.
Yeah.
But even younger than me, there's a quest for identity too, which is normal. But there is almost a sense of quest for culture. And when she said that, I have always known that I struggle with culture. So, you know, it was really interesting to hear her say that, that she observes that in, you know, large groups of people my age and younger. So I think that's true. I think we struggle with culture. And I know that that's part of the reason why we don't celebrate some of the traditional holidays the way that they are. We don't quite understand why are we celebrating it this way. And over the last few years, I think that, well, especially since 2020, and we've all been at home, and there's so much has come out around the country. There's been a lot of, you know, racial and civil unrest, and there's been a lot of information that's come from that.
Absolutely.
We've been very educated people these last year and a half. And you know, some of that has been surrounding holidays that we celebrate here in America and what they mean and, you know, what they really should mean. And I think Thanksgiving
is one of those. And
certainly
what they mean to different subsets, right? So the indigenous people are not thrilled about Thanksgiving.
It's a day of mourning,
right? It's a day of mourning. They are mourning their ancestors who died in the colonization of this country. And it's a righteous point of view. And you can't just go, oh, well, I don't want to think about that, because that is our actual history.
Well, I thought, you know, I always thought it's not okay to not celebrate Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter, these major holidays. And now I have a kind of a little bit different relationship with Christmas and Easter and things like that that are related to my religion and my religious preferences. But I still have an issue with sometimes the way they're celebrated. But Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday. It's not, you know, it really has nothing to do with Christianity. And it's not, I mean, we celebrate it now in a different way than they did 150 years ago. And so originally, you know, Thanksgiving was a day of just thanks. It really had nothing to do with Native Americans and, you know, what happened back in the early 1600s. So, and we were kind of learning about some of this yesterday, the kids and I, and, you know, Matt and I have definitely read a lot and come to terms with a lot in the last year and a half. But it's also interesting talking to the kids about it and what that means for our family and what it could mean. And so it was a really great day yesterday. It wasn't yesterday. It was Thursday.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Today's Saturday.
I know, but it all blends together.
So, yeah. So we had a great day, and we, again, you know, we didn't abandon it. We decided that we're going to learn about the day itself and learn about what it means and what it was supposed to mean. And, you know, we learned that the holiday itself, while, you know, President Lincoln signed that into, you know, now it's a national holiday when Lincoln signed it in. So we know that it's been celebrated since then. It was celebrated before that kind of unofficially, but it really wasn't brought in as a way to celebrate our relationship with Native Americans. It was brought in to kind of garner peace between the North and the South after the Civil War.
Interesting. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was a day of thanks and prayer, and you know, it had great intentions. And so up until the early 1900s, that's how it was celebrated, as just a day of thanks in our country and unification. But then in the early 1900s, you know, when we had a lot of industrialization, it started changing. There were a lot of European immigrants coming in, and I think that this was the way that, you know, colonists, which, you know, this has been hundreds of years since they've been here now, but this is the way our ancestors, our white ancestors, decided this is how we're going to establish the difference between immigrants and Americans, you know. And they really did. They used these holidays, specifically Thanksgiving, as a way to say that this is the identity of what it is to be truly American. And this is what defines Americanism. So these immigrants coming in, you know, they're like, well, we want to be defined as American. So, of course, they would celebrate this holiday that they don't know. So we've just sort of handed that down. And, you know,
fascinating.
It's very.
It really is. Yeah.
My family, my great grandfather came here from Canada in the early 1900s. And, you know, just along with a lot of others that immigrated here at that time, he would have been a young child. And so my great-great-grandparents would have adopted American holidays and made a big deal out of it, you know, that we do everything to a T.
Right.
And that makes sense, because that's how my family's always been. You know, Thanksgiving, we do A, B, C, D, and E, and that's the way we've always done it, and our parents did it. And so when I realized that's why we were celebrating, why we were buying a turkey, why we were buying stuffing and cranberries. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to celebrate Native American culture or heritage, which all of those things are Native American foods. Turkey,
absolutely.
You know, pumpkin.
Cranberries. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we're not eating it to celebrate that. We're doing it because it's an American tradition.
Right.
And
that is kind of founded in this fairy tale, really.
It really was. It was a very whitewashed, what was it, 1789, somewhere around there, when Lincoln, when the Civil War ended and Lincoln signed this
into 1789. That has to be
1863.
Okay.
1863 would have been after the Civil War. So
I'm not really good on history and dates. Yeah.
Well, I can remember just from what we talked about yesterday with the Thanksgiving holiday. So not all of this is just
1865, says Tom. All right. Thank you, Tom.
That's probably accurate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But when that was signed in, we took all of this history that we had and we whitewashed it and decided that this is the Thanksgiving holiday. And even more so in, the 1910, 1920s when we really decided this is what Thanksgiving's going to be. So
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot surrounding our culture. And the reason why it's important, it's not important because, I mean, it is important for numerous reasons, but, it's not like we're saying here, we don't want to celebrate this anymore. A lot of people are saying we don't want to celebrate it this way. Mm-hmm. We want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with ruining traditions.
Nope.
It's just
or
honoring.
Canceling culture.
No, it's definitely not. It's actually like, there's some of us who are so lost in our culture and not understanding what we're doing and what we're celebrating. And I know I'm not the only one now. So.
No. We don't actually celebrate it either. I mean, it's been many years since my husband and I celebrated. Mostly because I live here and most of my family lives somewhere else, and so I'm not going to get together with family. That's for darn sure, and. Realistically, I couldn't care less about the pilgrims and the, I just don't care. I mean, it's,
If I want to have a day devoted to my family, I'm going to do that, anyway. I will make the most of that for sure. There's a national holiday where the world shuts down for a minute and I'm going to stay home with my family and enjoy that. And that's why. Yep. I say, we don't abandon what we're meant, what it's meant to be, but we need to recognize what has happened and what we should be celebrating. And, that goes
and
that's
choose
for all of us.
And make a legitimate choice about how we want to celebrate. Yeah, absolutely. And Thanksgiving, I mean, it says it right in its name, what it is. Mm-hmm. So, Thanksgiving. And there are so many things to be thankful about.
Mm-hmm.
So many people in our lives and, circumstances. And I there's so much to be grateful for that it seems like if that really was the bottom line for the holiday, that feels good to me,
Yeah, it's not doing its job because I struggle often to think about what I'm thankful for. So if that's the meaning of Thanksgiving, we must be missing some boats. But I do. I really gratitude lists. I have such a hard time. I know I have things to be grateful for and I'm always so grateful, but it's just I'm always I'm so grateful for them, so I'm not going to stop and sit and write these down. I'm going to work harder for them.
and
I do stop
me,
to
I,
smell the. I forget to stop smell the roses.
Yes, you notice the thorns. And
oh yeah,
Yeah, yeah.
Well, exactly. I'm working away at those, and so I don't have time for
exactly. Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, I think we were not told, we were not taught, certainly growing up, and I know I wasn't, what the true history mm-hmm. is of our country and how all of that came to be. And, you know, the colonists were these people who came in on, you know, the white charger of, I don't know, civilization and, you mm-hmm. know, all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, it really has been little by little over the years that we've started to actually learn the rest of our history. Mm-hmm. And because that was just a small slice, you know, just yeah. a small slice. There's so much more. And, you know, I just think that if we don't understand all of it, if we don't know what the good, the bad, and the ugly is of our history, we don't know who we are. We mm-hmm. don't know who we are. And I think that sense of being kind of culturally lost is part of that. That mm-hmm. we were kind of spoon-fed a fable, mm-hmm. a lot of fables, and we're in the process of uncovering the truth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's definitely a shift. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to get here at different times. And
absolutely.
You know, some people may never want to go this direction and really yep. learn or hear kind of more about it. But I think
it kind
generations
of reminds me of Santa Claus, you know, that whole Santa Claus thing. Because, yeah, there's magic in that story and you know, but mm-hmm. it doesn't, getting underneath that myth mm-hmm. doesn't take anything away from Christmas.
No.
You know?
I mean, yeah, eventually we have to understand that that's going to happen. And so, you know, even, yeah, that's a whole other story too, because there are, I think that's like a huge debate. Do we tell children that there is a Santa Claus? And I think most families would say, yeah, like tell them, you know, until they're old enough to
right.
Understand the difference. I have four kids at different ages. They, and different maturity levels. And
yes.
two of them figured it out very quickly. And mm-hmm. the other two, one of them, I'm not sure.
He might still
be in process of figuring it out. But
I think my grandson might still be in process.
Yeah. But there's an older one to be like, yeah, Santa's not real. And yeah. so that's just how it goes yeah. in our house.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
we also, I think that I was reading this the other day that it was a teacher, I think, that had said, you know, if you're going to get your kids iPads and phones and computers and things like that, don't put from Santa. Put it's from mm-hmm. you. You know, claim mm-hmm. it. Put the mm-hmm. little things from Santa, because not every house gets the same treatment from Santa then. And so I've had my own issues with just some the way that Christmas is celebrated here, mm-hmm. you know, traditionally. And so we don't do gifts the same way. We don't always do gifts. In fact, most Christmases, and this goes for birthdays too, we used to spend every birthday, we would come over here to the coast, or if we lived here, we would go up to Gold Beach and spend it with my grandma. So everybody's birthday. So that's six birthdays a year. We'd go up to my grandma's and she'd make cake. And we didn't do presents or anything, but we would play games all day. And, you know, she was a video game connoisseur. She owned every single original Nintendo game, I think, probably that existed.
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
Super Nintendo and 64. Yeah, she was amazing. So we spent, that's what we did for birthdays. And mm-hmm. similar to holidays, too, we would spend them, go see her or go travel. We would travel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now I haven't. Some people know this about me. I have not traveled very far. I've barely gotten out of Oregon. So when I say travel, I mean we'd like go up into the woods. But
right.
we spent the year before we moved back here, I think 2018, we spent all of Christmas up on Mount Ashland. There was nobody there. So it was just amazing.
Fresh,
like 2 feet of fresh snow and not a single person in sight. So,
and I think those are the experiences that, you know, when I look back at my childhood, it's the experiences that I remember, that I value. Yeah. The physical presence, I frankly, I can't remember any of them, you know?
I mean, they came and went. This is going to not go over well for some people, but I hate the idea of presents. I've always hated it, you know, as a kid that, well, I think everybody as a kid at some point in their life feels like life's not fair. But I think there are many kids who go through some rough experiences when they're younger, and holidays can be especially traumatic for them because of that. And, you know, I will say that I have my own issues with that. And I just hate the idea of presents. And I feel like a Grinch because Michelle last year got me just the best present. I mean, she just, I don't know how she knew, but.
So I'm
always like, I'm sorry I don't get anybody else anything. I don't.
But, you know, I really think that presents, if they're done correctly, presents are.
Yeah.
Are what the giver wants to give. You know, it's
about the relationship.
It really is. And it's about the desire to give, you know, I used to think when I was a kid, you know, it was like, it was what you got, right? What did you get for Christmas? As I got older, what I realized was that it's all about what you give.
Yeah.
It's about the giving. It's about watching that spark in the eye that happens when you give something to somebody that is meaningful to them, that they enjoy, or that it surprises them, or I much prefer to being a giver. I just prefer it. You know,
I don't like either. Ada's the one. I think people know that about Michelle. Definitely knows that she.
Yeah.
She was like, look, I know I'm not getting anything from you. And hopefully I give her enough love throughout the year.
And I'm sure that's what counts. That is what counts. You know, it is because the presents are really just a physical manifestation of the
like
love.
If I'm just like, man, this person is just really geared toward this and I really want to, you're right. It is about like the giver. Cause if there was something, I would just be so excited to.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just never think in that vein. And so I'm never looking out for things or, you know, listening really well.
Which is perfectly fine because you devote your entire life to serving others. I mean, that's the reality. Yeah. That's the reality.
Ada's a great giver. She's the one in the house that she's got her closet right now is slowly filling with presents that she's been wrapping and collecting for people.
I love that.
And she doesn't spend a lot of money. She's got some money in savings. She doesn't spend a lot, though. So she, I don't know, some she makes, some she has one in there that's for Bernie, and it's the biggest present in the closet.
Oh. So,
and I know what it is, but I'm not going to say.
That's great.
Yeah, it is great.
So let's shift gears here a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because I think we should touch briefly on COVID. I know we were talking about, you know, the stuff that we can be thankful for. And certainly one of the things that we can be thankful for is that we have had a bit of a dip in the COVID cases. But we're now kind of looking at circumstances aligning themselves that probably won't result in the continuation of the dip. Right.
So you're saying is we're going to see an increase.
I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I'm usually Pollyanna, but, you know, I'm reading this stuff about Omicron, which is this new variant that.
Yeah, it deserves a name finally. So that tells you something.
Yes. And it is a variant of concern, which is evidently the highest tier in the variants, so they get, you know.
Yeah, I think that they said this one has, they said that the protein spikes on this one are, I think, five times higher of a mutation than Delta.
Yeah.
So they anticipate that could mean it's at least as contagious as Delta, if not more.
I think more. I mean, from what I read,
yeah,
it was several hundred times more contagious.
I imagine every single day we're going to get new information.
I think so too. Because it is, you know, again, it's a brand new mutation. The first time that it was seen was in South Africa, like around the beginning of November. I'm thinking the 4th or the 5th of November was the first documented case. Since then, it's definitely spread to more in South Africa, but it's also jumped. You know, and there was a report that came out today that there are two cases that have been documented in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, people are traveling, and especially traveling for Thanksgiving, which is, you know, which is part of this whole kind of perfect storm thing that's lining up.
Yeah.
I'm great
curious.
News.
Well, I guess curious is not the right word. I guess we're all a little bit in anticipation of what this is going to bring over the next month. And with the I mean, we're still in the holiday season. And so there are still people traveling.
And there will be people traveling for Christmas, obviously.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is if this is going to impact travel. Although we haven't really seen much of that with Delta, they didn't really close a lot down. So,
but they're already starting to close stuff down because of Omicron.
I mean, I saw New York. What did it? They don't even have a case in New York, but they cited an emergency state of emergency over it because
they don't want.
Yeah,
they don't want the possibility of visitors coming in who've been exposed. But I mean, at this point, it's not just South Africa, so it's kind of like closing the door after the horse has bolted.
Yeah,
you know, because it's already spread. So
well. You know, we're definitely going to be watching that in the clinic, and we definitely, you know, we definitely feel some increase. It's hard to kind of say how much because we're not like, we're not feeling overburdened yet. We're not like to the point where we're, you know, pulling in multiple staff or something, but we're
feeling
it.
But you're noticing an uptick,
we're noticing, we're noticing an uptick of people coming in to test, but also of, well, it's not so much an uptick of people testing positive. It's really just sort of like it's lingering around the same every day, which is, you know, two, three, four people every day. And we did have a period of time where there were no cases. We had a week or 10 days somewhere around there where solid, where there were no cases. And at up till then, it was really lowering down. So, you know, we just feel like either we're in a very small lull and we're just going to see a few cases here and there for a while, or this might be another uptick. But it's just really hard to know. And so,
And we have to keep reminding ourselves that this is a brand new virus.
I mean, and, you know, what like watching the area around us, I think, is really important. And so, you know, watching what happens in the country as this develops, if Omicron, well, I mean. I would say when Omicron reaches the United States.
Yeah, I think it's already here. I mean,
maybe, you know. Probably, but I mean, when that happens, it'll just be keeping an eye on what that looks like elsewhere. That'll give us a really good picture of what it's going to look like for us. And I know that, you know, a lot of the projection in the early 2020, it took a long time to reach us. It took, it feels like until mid 2021 to finally catch up to us, but I think we're at a point now where it's here and it's spread enough around. So if we do end up having Omicron variant here in the United States, I have no doubt that it'll spread through here.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it will. They still are, you know, looking at what that means, of course, because I haven't seen any reports about how serious the illness is. I haven't seen anything about that. In fact, the only thing I saw was that the person was asymptomatic, which means they had no symptoms. So, interesting, right? It's like so it's more contagious.
I see a lot of like reaction happening. And so it makes me wonder what is really going on over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot, it's supposedly a lot more contagious, and there are a couple of spikes in it that are potentially more dangerous, but we don't have hard, cold data yet. I mean, we just don't. So
I assume it's how contagious it is. I would assume that that's why they're, concerned. Not that it's plowing through the country and killing people, but that, hey, like, this is very, very contagious. And if it turns deadly, it's certainly contagious enough to make that widespread.
And I would think that if we had Lauren Farmer sitting here with us today, what he would say is, people, just keep up what you're doing. Get vaccinated, get boosted, wear your masks if you're going to be around people that you don't know, and don't hang out in indoor crowded spaces. I mean,
it's like his spirit is with us.
I know. We are channeling Lauren. but it just makes sense. You know, I mean, the virus is not done with us, clearly not done with us, and it's going to keep mutating. I mean, that's the nature of a virus, is that it wants to live. It doesn't want to get shut down. It wants to live.
Well, so it doesn't want to be. Yeah, it doesn't want to be too contagious and kill off everybody and then have nowhere to go.
Exactly.
So it just wants to slowly creep around, and that's the virus living its best life. So.
There we go. And you know, I'm not really interested in the virus living its best life.
No.
I really want to.
That's why we're masking and vaccinating and trying not to gather with thousands of people. Which has been fairly easy for me, but
it's been easy for me as well. You know, I don't need the parties. In fact, I gotta say, I'm not a big holiday party person. And in years past, it's been kind of like, what do I say when I'm invited to a party? How do I say, I don't really can't do it for whatever?
I'm sick that day.
Yeah, right?
So
to all of my dear friends who would love to extend an invitation to me to come to a party, please, I know you love me and I love you too, but please don't make me go to a party. Please.
I know, I'm just not. I get asked, fairly regularly to kind of go do things, and it's by a lot of different people too. And so, I'm certainly, I would love to spend time with people, but I'm not a going out with a lot of people kind of person. So
I like to work with people. Give me a project to work on with people, and I'm there. I'm all about that.
I think that, and I don't know if we probably haven't talked about this on here, but I think you and I have talked about this, about how, like, kind of people see us on Facebook, and it's just sort of like a snapshot. It's just a little bit of who we are, but, I think they see that, and they're like, oh, I would love to hang out with that person. And so, but if you got to know me in real life, not that you wouldn't want to hang out, but you would know that that's just not something I do. And
let's hang out doing something.
Yeah, right? I'm great. Like you were saying, work, that's how I meet. If you want to be my friend, like, get a job with me, because that's the only way it's going to happen. I only think about work.
Yes, I know. And, maybe that's all part of that whole thing that we were talking about in the beginning about, that we measure our worth by what we accomplish. And that's always what we're
looking
at. I'm
just saying to the out there, to the world, this is me putting it out there. Like, that's how how you're gonna
that's how
be
she
friends.
Rolls, folks.
I'm not great with self care and taking care of myself. So if you want to be friends, work's about it.
There we go. Although we are working on that, just to let you know. We are working on the whole self care thing. Yeah, we are. We really are. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. We are. Yeah.
So can you repeat again?
Yep.
Testing and vaccine clinics, days, times, all that stuff.
Yeah. So the testing is still Monday through Saturday, 12 to 3, and it's around back. Please don't come in the front door. and that's at St. Timothy's, 401 First Street. And then the vaccine clinic Wednesdays and Saturdays, 12 to 3, and that's for everyone 12 and up. So ages 5 to 11 is Saturdays from 10 in the morning until noon.
And I believe St. Tim's has the flu shot as well.
They do have the flu shot. Yes.
It is not the super duper shot for the seniors. It was funny. Bernie was trying to make that distinction. Like, it's a quad shot, but it's not the super duper quad shot for the seniors.
I just say the old people shot. I don't know if that's politically correct.
Excuse me.
Is this the old people shot or is this mine?
I'll claim it. Frankly, I'll claim it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So last week, I asked you if you would share your vision of a Brookings that basically works for everyone, leaving no one out, and that would be, you know, the best version of our community. Now, I know that's a tall order, but we could take it in small bites. I mean, I think there are some areas that I think nearly everyone would agree need some serious work. Housing, for instance.
That's always number one.
Right? What would your magic wand version look like in terms of housing in this community?
All right. So I have to kind of give a little disclaimer at the beginning that, I can only speak from my experiences, and I definitely can't represent the whole community on these answers. So I just want to say that.
Nobody's asking you to represent anybody but yourself. What is your...
Because I have no idea what's needed in the, you know, world of people who are making over $100,000. No clue.
Right.
So I can definitely say, you know, if I had a magic wand, we would have year-round shelter that's available for anybody. You know, nightly shelter where they come line up and you get everybody a bed. You know, we would have something like that. We would have transitional shelter because people often need that growth period in order to be more successful when they are independent. And, you know, we would have permanent supportive housing because there are people who, you know, they want to live independently, but, you know, they may have a developmental disability or intellectual disability. And so they don't quite understand how to manage their finances in a way that, you know, pays everything. And so I think that permanent supportive housing and just support with housing in general would probably reduce our amount of homelessness by, I'm going to say, a third, because we have quite a large group of people who could manage housing independently with just minor support and some with, you know, a little bit more. I don't know, you know, what numbers we would look like here, because it's hard to know. Once you start setting those things up, there is a fluctuation. You know, you have a lot of people who immediately get off the street. You do have some influx of people coming to the area because there are those resources there. So I certainly don't have numbers, but I can say that the housing study has some pretty good numbers. You know, we need well over 500 low-income housing units. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's huge for a community.
I think that's just Brookings. Yeah. I want to say that was the Brookings housing study, but maybe that was the Curry County. Because they did a Curry County study, like a community health improvement study, and then they did the Brookings housing study. So, and I kind of...
Well, even if it was for the entire county, if you need 500 additional low-income housing in a community where there are 22,000 people, that's a lot. That is a lot. Now, it's exponentially a whole lot more if you're just talking about Brookings, which has got 6,500 people in it.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a lot.
So it's probably the county,
way,
I would imagine. That,
either so. Way, it's a lot of housing that is needed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Way. So, and we need all of those steps. In fact, I would say the first step isn't even so much having a shelter. The first step is having really like a drop-in center, because people need to be somewhere during the day. And they also, you know, need supports and things like that. But it's not the case management and the resources and all of that that drives me to want to have a drop-in center in Brookings. It's the fact that, just like I said, people need to be somewhere during the day. And that we don't think about that. We think where people need to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
But during the day, they need to be somewhere that is safe and that's accepting, and that they're able to let down their guard. And so a drop-in center is really like a basic step. And it's also a place where people can go when they're not without housing and they are struggling. They don't want to lose their housing. So it's that kind of space. So we need a drop-in center. We need an area for people during the day. We need shelter for people at night. Transitional housing to help them move to that next step, and some permanent supportive housing. Those are basically, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, that's what I would put in today.
So in terms of having that, a lot of the pushback from parts of the community is that, you know, we can't have those services, that it's not possible to have those services. And since we don't have them, all of the people for whom those services would be the lifeline need to just move on down the road. You know, we don't want them in our community. I feel so strongly that the services would follow if there was just the political will here to do that.
I think it's going to be the opposite for us. I think we're going to keep our head down and move forward and establish these services regardless of the political will, whether that's, you know, city leadership, which I know we struggle with, or county, which I don't think has direct opposition to anything like that. I think they just sort of have that you know, that laissez-faire approach. So, well, I will say that the county is trying to be intentional with putting together housing services, but it feels like we go in circles there. So,
mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot less people that feel that way, you know, than we talk about, because as we've been moving forward, and I mean, I really do try to just keep my head down and put one foot in front of the other, because you know, about a year ago, started getting wrapped up in wanting the local leadership to approve of these projects and these programs that we're wanting to put in place and wanting to collaborate with them. And that really, you know, that really bit us and
backfired big time.
It really did.
Yep.
And
yep.
So,
I mean,
we
lost Jake. That's mm-hmm. the bottom line is we lost our mm-hmm. mayor because of that, which is
yeah.
like appalling.
Which I had people reaching out to me, and you know, Jake kind of said some things in the end that I really appreciate, but I had people reaching out to me that had said, you know, you're the reason we don't have our mayor. And let me just tell you, like, that is not the way I would have written that ending. So
No. It's not the way any of us would have written it.
I definitely there's nothing that I did that was out of the ordinary, out of the norm.
There was nothing that he did that was out of the ordinary.
No, there really wasn't.
I mean, it was, you know.
So it certainly, I have no reason to communicate with the city about the plans mm-hmm. that we're putting in, you know, that the motions that we're making and mm-hmm. The progress. It would be nice to collaborate, but that's obviously not going to happen right now.
Not going to happen, no.
And I think you do have
mm-hmm. much, much more support than.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, there are people that reach out all of the time and, mm-hmm. you know, want to participate. And mm-hmm. so I actually think that this isn't waving a magic wand. I think that this is, you know, me sharing what many people feel in this community that, hey, we're going to work towards these services. Mm-hmm. So this is me. This is our foreboding. I don't know what you'd
It's kind of the shot across
projecting.
The bow. Yeah. This is where we're headed.
This is where we have to go.
It's where we have to go. I mean, as a society, as a community, we have to take care of our own. And these people are our own. They belong to us.
I wish that, you know, I talked a little bit before about just sort of like trauma porn, and there's several different, there's a lot of different ways to kind of describe that. And, mm-hmm. you know, the way that I described it wasn't necessarily 100% accurate, but essentially it's where people thrive on seeing the pictures of sad people and things mm-hmm. like that. And, mm-hmm. You know, if we didn't have that, I think we would move a lot faster. If we didn't feel, I mean, all of us do it. I do it when I see the South Coast Humane Society post pictures of the dogs, yes. and I constantly, there's pictures of them getting rescued. Well, it's not like, I mean, how inappropriate would that be for me to be like, here's a picture. I put a picture of Michael out there. You mm-hmm. know, he said I could, mm-hmm. but it would be really inappropriate for me to post a picture every time somebody had something going on and happened to them. So,
and yet the stories are real. The people are
they
real.
Are, and I wish that people could see what I see, and I don't know how to convey that in a way mm-hmm. that, you know, spreads across the community. I mm-hmm. wish they could see what Michelle and I and Bernie, what we see and what we mm-hmm. go through on a daily basis, and how these broader arguments against homelessness and the people that are living out on the street don't make any sense. They mm-hmm. don't make sense. And so, you know, I wish there was a way to explain that better. And maybe I will find those words. You mm-hmm. know, let's hope as we continue doing this that I'm able to maybe find some of those words to describe it and make it make
well,
sense.
Well, and I think the reality is that by you talking here on this show, talking about some of the experiences and talking about some of the people and talking about some of the reality that you see on a daily basis, mm-hmm. it is spreading that information. And I think it's pretty clear to me that more people are getting involved. They get involved mm-hmm. with St. Tim's. They're getting involved. So I think it's spreading, Diana. I think you can pat yourself slightly on the back for having spread.
Well, I can't because I did arms today, so they're a little tired, but I will.
Well, I have to relay the bad news that we are almost out of time.
Once again.
So we've got a whole lot more to go through So we'll pick it up next week.
Yeah.
But another excellent thought-provoking conversation, and thank you. And thank you for listening. KCIW is fast approaching being back on the air. In fact, our antenna is mounted on the tower.
Woohoo!
Yahoo! Thanks to all of you who've donated and supported us through this crazy transition time. It's about to pay off. And a special thank you to Crescent City's KFUG for airing this show while KCIW is off the air. See you next week. This is Candace Michelle for Our Community.